Only U.S. citizens can vote in U.S. elections, but how might attempts to verify that citizenship impact how South Dakotans exercise their constitutional rights? You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. The U.S. Senate takes up debate over what is known as the Save America Act this week. President Trump has threatened to block all other federal legislation unless Congress passes the act. South Dakota legislators say they've already addressed one of the key issues in the Save America Act in PEER, what you need to bring when you register to vote. South Dakota Representative Heather Baxter made the case for SB 175 on the House floor. Here's a bit of that debate.
Many states have already passed this or are in the process, and even our federal voting is being finalized right now to require this with the SAVE Act. Senator Rounds just spoke about this by our Capitol a few weeks ago, saying we need to make sure we prove citizenship for federal voting. So they are hoping the SAVE Act goes forward in the Senate as it already has in the House. What are some things that require proof of citizenship? Getting a Social Security card, getting a passport, Medicaid, Medicare, and student federal financial applications, just to name a few. There is a lot of LRC cleanup in the bill. The main change is in Section 1, where there's an added requirement that the voter has provided sufficient evidence to demonstrate citizenship. Section 2 added what happens if the person does not provide proof of citizenship, which means that they will receive the federal-only ballot. Also, it adds a request worked out with the Secretary of State to make sure people already registered don't have to bring their documents again. Section 3 shows all the ways a person can prove they are a citizen. This lines up with what the Department of Public Safety requires for driver's licenses, like passports, birth certificate, tribal identification card, and a long list supplied by the federal government. And so this would just align our agencies. This bill has an emergency clause on it, so that it's in effect for our upcoming primary. I respectfully request a yes vote.
Thank you. Further remarks on Senate Bill 175? Any further remarks? Representative Poirier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I know that election integrity has been a hot topic, and it's very unifying sometimes. But, you know, true leadership really honors the roots of South Dakota. And what I love about this bill is that it delivers both. It accepts tribal identification cards as ironclad proof of U.S. citizenship for voter registration. It's not an afterthought. It's a frontline respect for our nine sovereign nations who are U.S. citizens by birthright under the 14th Amendment and the Indian Citizenship Act. I applaud these efforts. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Further remarks on Senate Bill 175. Representative Mortensen.
I have a question for the prime.
State your question.
I should have asked you this earlier. So this is for initial registration to vote. If I'm changing a party registration, do I need to then provide the citizen documentation as provided in Section 3 of this bill? I mean, I'm already registered to vote. I'm just re-registering parties.
Representative Baxter, do you wish to answer that question?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. No, you do not.
Further remarks on Senate Bill 175, Representative Mucky.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll only say this once more. Again, you've heard me say this on the floor many times. Non-citizens cannot vote in South Dakota. This bill is wholly unnecessary. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Further remarks on Senate Bill 175. Any further remarks? Anything in closing, Representative Baxter? Representative Baxter in closing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So just to confirm, South Dakota Searchlight and Kello Land, you probably saw the article last year, did report that there was 273 non-citizens who were on the voter rolls that were removed. So just a reminder, this bill is only for voters doing new registrations and does not affect anyone who is already registered.
The bill passed 64-3 with three excused. Now, for clarity, certain non-citizens with legal status can get a South Dakota driver's license. In 2024, South Dakota voter rolls were cleared of 273 non-U.S. citizens. According to the Secretary of State's office at the time, those registrants had answered no to the citizenship question on their application, but they were registered anyway due to what the office called human error. One of those 273 non-citizens had cast a ballot during the 2016 election. Now, not everyone is on board with the heightened requirements. The Native American Rights Fund opposed the bill, citing increased burdens on Native American voters, especially those living in remote areas. Samantha Chapman is advocacy manager for ACLU. She stopped by SDPB's Kirby Family Studio to explain why they would like to see Governor Roden veto the bill.
If you pop down to the auditor's office to register to vote for the first time, not only do you have to present your driver's license, you know, also have to present, you know, your birth certificate. The name has to match your birth certificate and your driver's license, or you have to present your passport or some other kind of proof that you are a United States citizen in order to be eligible to register to vote. We had another law passed this session that allowed Senate Bill 30. That allows voters to challenge an individual's eligibility to register to vote based on perceived citizenship status. So, and piggybacking off of another law that passed in 2025, HB 1062, that requires the Secretary of State to publish the voter registration file on the website for free for anyone to download, anyone can now download the Secretary of State's voter registration file, look at names, say, Garcia, I don't think that person's a U.S. citizen, and file a challenge with their county auditor.
What are you seeing could be the potential impact of this law going into effect?
I think one of the biggest concerns that we have is the fact that this bill has an emergency clause on it. So that means that the day that the governor signs this bill into law, and we hope he doesn't, but if he does, it immediately goes into effect. Mm. We have the voter registration cutoff to vote in the June primary as May 18th. So we essentially maybe 2 months for county auditors and election administrators to get up to speed and figure out how to comply with this law, what processes need to be put in place, how to train staff, get all of that rolled out efficiently and effectively to make sure that any eligible voter that's trying to register to vote can do so in time to vote in the primary.
So you mentioned your name having to be the same as the name on your birth certificate. My name is different because I've been married. So anybody who's changed their names through adoption or marriage would be impacted. You'd have to bring additional paperwork. Let's talk about who it affects, and let's start with people who have had name changes for a variety of reasons.
Correct. So this would affect anyone whose name is different than what's listed on their birth certificate. So if you are a married person and you've changed your last name for that reason, you'd have to not only bring your birth certificate, your current driver's license, you'd also have to bring your marriage certificate to prove that that's why your name is different than what's listed on your driver's license. This would also impact anyone who voluntarily chooses to change their name outside of the context of marriage. This also impacts oftentimes young voters who maybe are registering to vote for the first time at their college address, and they don't have their birth certificate with them at college because that's an odd thing to bring to college with you. This would affect rural voters who maybe don't have a lot of time to drive to their county seat to register to vote, and if they make that long drive out there for voter registration purposes and it turns out they are not aware that they have to bring this documentation, unlikely that they're going to turn around, drive home, and drive back again to go get what they need to register to vote. They probably just won't register.
How does it impact people in Indian country, tribal communities? Because I know there have been some Native American organizations who've spoken out against the legislation.
Yeah, absolutely. So this bill does include a provision that allows tribal IDs to be accepted for voter registration. However, there's no standards within the bill that specify what kind of identity identification needs to be present on a tribal ID in order to be acceptable for voter registration. Each tribe has their own tribal ID system. They all look different. They have different information listed. And so we've got, you know, 9 federally recognized tribes in South Dakota. If everyone has, you know, each has a different ID, this creates a lot of uncertainty for an already disenfranchised group of folks in our state.
Most Americans say having an ID to go register to vote is a good thing. Most Americans want to trust the elections. Do you acknowledge there's a trust problem that needs to be addressed in some way?
I think that if anything, this is part of a larger attempt to sow a sense that there is more distrust in our elections than there actually is. And I think once we see policies like this get rolled out and implemented, it will create mistrust in our elections because it's likely to create a lot more chaos than it will actually solve any single one problem.
For people who say, yeah, you should have your birth certificate, you should be able to go to, whether you're a rural voter or you're, you know, 18-year-old voting for the registering to vote for the first time, having your paperwork in order is just what grown-ups do. What's your response to that?
I would say that life doesn't operate in a single clean vacuum space. There are so many mitigating factors that affect our everyday lives. And when we add, we're continually stacking burden after burden after burden on voters and on people in the U.S. trying to exercise their constitutional rights. Those all really do add up and make it really impossible for some people who would otherwise be eligible to register to vote to be able to do so, because perhaps maybe you were a foster kid. Perhaps maybe you had a chaotic, you know, kind of childhood or home life situation where you just don't have your birth certificate. Birth certificates also cost money. If you're unhoused, you probably can't afford to go get a birth certificate. If you are low income and you're working, maybe you don't have time to go to the county auditor's office, find out that you had to have this additional document, and you don't have time to go back home and go get your documents and come back. You can't just leave your work in the middle of the day. This creates challenges for people who are already experiencing a lot of other burdens.
Yeah. If you weren't born in South Dakota and you're registering to vote for the first time, you have to figure out what county you were born in and get your vital records from that county as well.
Correct. And passports are expensive. I mean, yeah. A lot of these provisions, like, sure, maybe these are documents that some people have, but I think that's a really privileged statement to say and make the assumption that everybody, you know, all adults in South Dakota can easily comply with these identification requirements.
If you need your driver's license or you need to prove citizenship to get other privileges, library cards and such, why not for voting? What's the difference?
The difference is that, you know, requiring extra documentation for driver's licenses, renting a car, hotel room, whatever, those are privileges. Those aren't your fundamental constitutional rights. Your constitutional rights should not be unduly burdened, as the Supreme Court has said in other cases.
What do you think the impact might be on election workers, county registrars, the people in small town South Dakota who are doing the work of registering people to vote?
I mean, getting back to our earlier point about mistrust in elections, it's that, like, this is going to put a lot of stress on our election workers who are already trying to adapt to changes that were made to our election system last legislative session, that were, you know, being corrected through legislation this legislative session. And so, again, we're adding on all these changes, all these complications, with very little justification for actually needing any of these things. And it's going to create more confusion. It's going to create longer delays and potentially disenfranchise a lot of voters. I mean, this is a, you know, state legislation that closely mirrors the federal attempts to do something very similar with the SAVE Act. We would just ask, you know, in South Dakota, for you to contact Governor Roden and ask him to veto SB 175. And if you've got extra time, reach out to your federal congressional delegation and ask them to vote no on the SAVE Act.
Samantha Chapman is advocacy manager for ACLU of South Dakota. We reached out to the South Dakota Secretary of State's office to seek clarity on how Senate Bill 175 would be implemented. That invitation remains open. That's our conversation for today. I'm Lori Walsh from all of us here at SDPB. Thank you for listening.